Welcome to Start Writing. I'm Joe Bendosky, and we are continuing our discussion on exposition. As I mentioned in the previous episode, as Jay and I have been covering this for several months, I began to be concerned that the only opinions and ideas on exposition being discussed were our own. And I wanted to find a way to get more opinions from various writers and their own approach to exposition, maybe some of the best advice they'd gotten on exposition and how they've learned to use it in their own writing. And during that time, I had several authors reach out to me. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity to bring in a few more opinions to, you know, maybe they can identify some of the great examples from their own work or just great examples that really help them understand how to include this in their work. And I thought this would be really useful to the writing community. And so today my guest is Michael Abramson. Is that how you would say it?
Perfectly.
Yes. So Michael, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and your book?
Sure. Thanks so much. So Michael Abramson, I am a first-time independent writer. Just recently finished my first book called Dominant Trait, and the book is a novel focused on social inequality, social and genetic inequality. And it's important to note that it was done by means of fiction. Purposely, if it's okay, just to give you a real quick background on myself. So I, by trade, I work within marketing research. I deal a lot with big data, with, analysis. And what I've always found is that there's a lot of people that are able to create the data, but there's really not that many people that's been able to interpret that data in a way that is easily digestible for clients to be proactive with. And I've always found that you have to step back and really think creatively and outside of the box to be able to really get that data properly for the clients. And I find that's also true within both books and sometimes even in movies, but mostly in books where nonfiction is crucial, providing all the data points. But a lot of times, if you really want people to understand the data and to think about the data, you really need to step outside the box and look at it from a fiction way. And since the topic is so important to me about social inequality, I really wanted to make this book for people to think about the data and the numbers, not just having the numbers tell them how to think, but instead how they should be thinking about the numbers. That's a high level overview. I don't know if I gave you too much info off of that.
So I guess to really help the audience understand who would be the ideal target audience for her, what would you compare as like a mainstream author or book that they'd be familiar with that you would compare this to?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of my hopes, and again, I'm sorry, I'll give you a little quick, very quick little backstory, but one of my hopes with this book also is to bring back a genre that I feel has kind of lost its way, which is social fiction, something that was really popular in the mid-20th century. Books like 1984, Fahrenheit 451. And so I really did try to focus this book to be a little bit along those lines. And I am actually starting to see a bit of a recurrence in some of the social fiction books. You know, obviously with today's environment and, you know, particularly what's been going on over the past 4 or 5 weeks, clearly there's a need for these kind of, this kind of thinking, out of the box thinking. And I guess books somewhat similar. Well, it's, you know, from books into the 20th century, like I said, like the 1984s, maybe an Animal Farm, those books, certainly, now, you know, something closer to home, maybe a little bit like Margaret Atwood, although, you know, she's a little more dystopian than I would say my book is. I try to keep it a little closer to reality, just, slightly different, but not as far different, but along those lines, maybe a little bit of from an ideological way of like American Dirt, if you're familiar with that book. In that it really just gives you a different way to think about, from a fiction standpoint, but of a very important and serious, event that's happening.
All right. So as you mentioned, 1984 is kind of the social fiction. The first thing I did is like, I want to go to Amazon and see how they're categorizing this book, 1984, mm-hmm. and this. And so the one that came up, sections that came up were political fiction, which I think is maybe just a turn of the phrase there. And then they put it in fiction satire, which was not a category I was familiar with initially. Yeah. But I thought those were both very good, good categories to put it in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've actually been doing quite a bit of research over the past few months, just thinking through the different genres and which were popular at which point in times and what was going on in the world at those times. And, you know, if you look at Goodreads, Amazon, certainly has their own, categorization, Goodreads as well. But Goodreads does allow the user to select the categorization. And I think they're a little more defined, particularly with the social fiction and, books that are close to that. Of course, there's probably 50 categories that would fall under, what I call social fiction. So it certainly can go by a few different names.
All right. So let's go ahead and dive into some exposition. So in our conversation before the podcast, you had mentioned that early, and I think this was an email you sent me as well, the early drafts of the book really struggled with, as you know, Bob, exposition problems. And what was some of the advice or direction you got to start solving that problem?
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I'll say right off the bat, I absolutely applaud you guys for spending so much time with exposition. Before, if I listened to this prior to writing a book, I probably would have questioned, like, why spending so much time on this? Is it really that difficult? It's really only for us, a small portion of the book. But I absolutely believe it was one of the toughest parts. And to add to that, the way I had written my book, and I don't know if this is just a style thing, but I had actually started with the middle of the chapter. I almost did this Star Wars style. I started in the middle. I did the beginning after I did the middle, because I wanted to fill in. I wanted to figure out what I needed to fill in. And while there was a lot of good with that, what it did leave me with is the fact that, okay, I really have to do a lot of, I really have to set the stage. And my book takes place in a slightly different America than we have now. And I say slightly, it's a little more social. It, you learn throughout the book what exactly that means, what policies have been implemented. But you do have to learn early on that it is a slightly different America. The main character at the beginning of the book is in his teens. And you do have to learn that something about the genetics in the book. And when I had written it, it was early on, it was actually the second chapter. It was originally my first chapter, but I ended up moving into my second. There was a conversation with the main character and his guidance counselor talking about how the grading system in the schools are different than they used to be based on advancements in genetic mapping and genetic learning. And what I mean by that is the example I can give real quick is the main character in his PE class, his last final race, which was a big part of his final grade, they had to run a mile. And he's a very athletic person. And he ran it in first place by quite a bit. He did great. He looked at his scores and he got an A. But he also noticed on the board that there were people in 10th place or 12th place that also got A's and A minuses. And, it really just didn't sit right with him. So we then learned that grades are actually, instead of being determined by the class average, grades are now determined by how well you do compared to your genetic potential. And that's a conflict that he has, one of the many, that he has throughout the books. But that's an early conflict where, you know, I get it and it makes sense. If somebody worked as hard as I did, even if they came in 10th, shouldn't they get in, this, you know, the same grade? But then again, is that real world practical? I did come in first. I watched this guy come in a whole minute.
Yeah, I really like this complex issue you presented here because, yeah, like,
right.
It can, if we can map that genetic potential, that is the question, right? Be like, well, they clearly tried as high as I do, which is a fantastic measurement of their internal effort. But
right.
How does that play out in how we interact in the world, right? Because, I mean, if we go back to the 1800s, the American school system was essentially established to create an effective workforce. So they didn't right. care how hard you tried. They cared what you could do on the factory floor. And I think there's still exactly. remnants of that in the scholastic system. But, yeah, I really – this is a that dilemma has made me interested in the book.
No, fantastic! I'm thrilled, and the best thing I hear from people writing that read it is that they say, "Huh, I really made me think about this," or "I really don't know that I agree with." Not that I really picked a side one or another, but you know, everyone has very different opinions. It's almost in some ways like a choose your own adventure book. But the problem that I had was. I ended up having the kid, you know, confused, and I thought a great way to kind of to talk about the way that the grading system now works, and that there, you know, it is a different now with the more advanced genetics, genetic from a marketing standpoint, is to have a guidance counselor kind of talk him through it, and I realized no matter what I did. I put it together and it didn't feel great, but I sent it out to a couple beta writers and they were the genius behind behind a lot of the changes.
The exposition. You
know, they really, you know, yeah, you know, when it came, they wrote a whole page of like, you know, things they loved about it. And then they wrote, you know, sections on what they think needed to be updated in position. And almost all of that was around the exposition. The phrase, it just didn't feel organic enough, was a big one. You know, because the guidance counselor is telling the main character about the, you know, the grading system, but they know all this, you know,
right,
and it really
yeah.
is as close to it's as close to, as you know, Bob, as from a literal standpoint as you can get. But here's what made such a difference. And it was really, it took me days and days to really come up with this, and it seems so small, but it makes such a difference. Is I added a third person into the room when they had this conversation, and this person was his mom, who happens to be a lawyer. But we learned through the conversation that there's quite a bit of animosity between his mom and the guidance counselor. It turns out they're on opposite sides. Of their opinions about, you know, what the grading systems should be like. You know, the principal's more liberal, likes the you know, being graded based on your genetic potential. The mom is a much more conservative. She actually had fought years back against having these new policies come into play. So by adding that other person, it made what was kind of a slow story. You know, as you know, and I think you said this in a prior podcast, as you know, Bob does also slow down on top of everything else. It really slows the story down. And by having it being a little bit more of a contested kind of conversation, really picked up the pacing quite a bit, but it also allowed them to really explain to the reader what's going on in a way where it seems much more organic. And like, for example, originally in my original draft, I had the guidance counselor show the main character his genetic scores and say, you know, as you know, you're very strong in athletics and math and right. But now what I was able to do is I had the guidance counselor take out the genetic score. And then the mom steps in and says, what are you doing? You know, and he's like, if it's okay with you, I want to show him the scores. And she's like, well, that's not supposed to be shown to students. You know that, you know, and it gets a little bit more into the backstory, just a little bit, a tease, just to make it clear there that they both have a kind of a strong history of being on opposing sides of this argument. But then it allowed me to sort of bring out all of these issues without just saying, you know, as you know, you do well. Instead, you know, the mom finally says, okay, I think I'll allow you to show him. I don't see why it couldn't hurt, you know, and then he shows it to him. So it established, you know, seeing it for the first time, explaining things that he hadn't exactly seen before, but in a very contested way. And the pace really picks up when you do it that way as well, which really made such a difference in the book.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to solve it. Like, you introduce this third character with an opposite opinion, and immediately you just get that conflict, and you get to have exposition, but rather than saying, as you know, they're presenting right. Their argument. Be like, this is why I'm right. You should listen to me, right? So, yeah.
Exactly. And it's almost, you can do it sarcastically in some ways, like, but you should already know that, you know, rather than, it's so different to say, as you know, to two people that are talking, you know, socially or friendly versus two people that are, you know, talking a little more violently, well, saying you should know that already. You know,
yeah.
Why do I have to tell you this?
We see this in political discourse all the time. They're like, you know, this. They prove my argument, and so
exactly.
Even though you could even put the exact phrase, you know, but in that kind of contentious debate argument, it's organic because that's how people argue. We see it all the time.
Exactly. And one of the beta readers made some mention, I don't remember exactly what it was, but said something like, when you're arguing, you're usually not thinking as clearly, so you can get away with breaking some more rules.
Right.
So, you know, I feel like it really worked. And the other part that I think is important to kind of mention already, but as simple as it sounds to do this, it took me, I can't even tell you, days and days and days of, you know, aggravation and, you know, rewriting just to kind of come up with this and to make it work.
Yeah.
Properly. So it's one of those things that just sound and seem so simple, but really require a lot of out of the box thinking in how to do it.
So was the introduction of the mother, was that a beta reader suggestion, or they just said it didn't feel organic and you just wrestled with it and eventually you came up with that?
Somewhere in between. So the beta reader suggested that I bring in another character.
Okay.
I don't remember if they said mother or not, but that's the first thing that did pop in mind. So I felt like it was going to work, but even once I had the mother in, it took a little while to make it work right. I knew I had always wanted to bring the mother in a little earlier than I did anyway. So I was a little, you know, once they suggested sort of a third person plus someone who's on the opposing side of him to show, you know, it's a little, when they said it, it's a little bit like the whole cartoon where you have an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know, I guess in this case, you don't know which is the angel, which is the devil. It's up to the reader, but you know, that's a little bit more like what it was like.
So, well, great. Well, I think that was a great example of a tool I don't think we'd really discussed very much, was bringing in a third character and shifting the exposition point to a contentious point between the new character and the existing characters. So yeah, definitely great examples there. So is there anything, any other technique or tool that you really used in the book or discovered mm-hmm. along the way? Could you give us an example of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, so the book, like I've mentioned, is a lot of the main character, at least the earlier part of the book, as he starts growing older, he's seeing it's hand some of the differences in the world. Things that people are still kind of hotly debated on whether it makes sense or not. And a lot of it, to show that I want to keep this book as a conflict rather than he's necessarily one side or another, you know, to allow the reader to kind of be in that middle ground as well, I really had to play around with what he was thinking more than what he was saying, or a combination of the two, but keeping it very brief. You know, I couldn't do more than just a few sentences, a few words, I mean, for each time, but enough that it really, you know, it felt like he was doing the right thing. It seems like he's doing the right thing, but then something in his gut told him, did I do the right thing? You know, so that kind of that really quick, really short sort of, you know, my gut is, what his gut is feeling, or, you know, maybe he wasn't fully confident. That made a big difference from an exposition standpoint, to show that he's not fully sure where he stands. He thinks he knows, but he's not sure.
Okay. Can you expand on that a little bit more? So how did that take a very data driven piece of information and convert it into more story fashion, shifting him to unsure and gut instinct?
Yeah, absolutely. So early on, there's a basketball tryouts for his high school. So he's a little bit older, and he's in basketball tryouts. And again, him and his best friend are both very athletic. And he was pretty confident that the two of them would get on the team. But someone in the tryouts was fairly short, 5'2". And he pretty much laughed at him. He's saying, why does he even come to the tryouts, at 5'2"? So, he'll never make the team. He's just, even if he's great, he's just too short. And to me, that is kind of like a data-driven thing. He's thinking more, the fact is, if you're short, it's just statistically, if not impossible, very, extremely difficult to be successful in the varsity league. It turns out throughout practice, he does extremely well. He finds that, he was very popular with the other teammates trying out. He's, very fast, very good at stealing the ball, shooting. And when the selection came, the main character and his best friend made the team, but this other guy didn't, right? And then this guy, the main character, goes again, his gut is pulling in the two directions, and he stands up for the guy and says to the coach, if he's not on the team, I'm not on the team, right? And eventually it works its way that he's able to convince the coach to get him on the team. Everyone's, happy, clearly the main player, the main character made a statement, an opinion, but at the end, he then felt, did I do the right thing here? He's really good, but is he going to be able to help us win? Or should have I just said, height is certain, you have to be a certain height and that's it. At least as a cutoff. And by kind of showing his thinking, turned this from a, like for him to really go from a data sort of driven thinking to more of an emotional and comments kind of thinking outside the box. But then it shows again the uncertainty. Like, you feel like before you get to the point of showing that he has some doubts, some second guessing, you thought, okay, this guy has kind of sided to the left, let's say, to one side of things. But I want to make it clear he's not fully there. He's still young. He's still learning. He's still trying to figure out where he sort of fits. So that little second guess in his head and gut, nobody else knows it. No one else heard it. It's only there for, him and the reader. But it still shows that, he's still not sure where his opinions are.
Okay. All right. So I have a few other questions that not necessarily related to exposition or your book. I had an opportunity to go over to your Amazon page and read your blurb. And the blurb is not really about the story at all. It's about the social issues. I mean, it very clearly defines this as a piece of social or political fiction. And the emphasis of the blurb is that social and political question and debate that you want the reader to walk away with. So my question here is, you clearly stand in political and social fiction. And that's clearly how your marketing has been set up by reading your blurb. So how has that worked for you in the marketing platform? And now I'll even bring up why I mentioned this. So in my book, it's an espionage fictional thriller that starts in the 1938s and goes through a couple decades where these spies and scientists are working on various secrets. And it's all about propaganda and media persuasion. And the original tagline for the book had been, "What makes a nation believe a lie?" And that tagline in all my advertising had become very politicized. People who were, you know, either pro or against Trump always felt like that line was attacking them. And so there'd be these huge political arguments on my advertisements on Facebook. And the book wasn't about that at all. It was, you know, it was about how propaganda can be used to manipulate, but I didn't pick a political side. I was just illustrating various techniques that have been used throughout history. But that tagline itself had galvanized political people on both sides of the political spectrum. And as a result, my sales performed very poorly, because everyone was convinced it was attacking whatever they were believing. So when I removed that tagline, my sales shot through the roof. I went from selling like 1 to 2 books a day to selling 10 to 15 books a day, just because I had depoliticized the book. And now people were just picking up a book of fiction. So, so that's where I'm coming from, is I see that you're clearly writing political fiction with a very, you know, political themed story. How has that worked for you in marketing, or what are you doing in marketing that is different from me that's working?
Such great questions. So obviously the arena has changed quite a bit over the past month, where social inequality has become to the forefront of most conversations and news, and certainly have seen quite a jump in the reaction to people, both from a sales, but also just from a conversation standpoint. I have played around a little bit with the ideology. I had actually thought a lot about almost exactly what you said. By the way, you've really got me now wanting to read your book. I really wanted to be careful not to, not to be one side or the other, left, right, pro-Trump, anti-Trump. But I did want to be clear that it's intended to be read to allow people to consider real world discussions, but just from a very different standpoint. I've even played around with the idea of where I put a link to a presentation where there was a therapist who started working with clients to watch, of all things, to watch cartoons. And they felt that a lot of these cartoons talked about, like happy things, whether it's friendships or how to resolve issues, but did it in a way where it was in such a safe environment. It was so out of so not normal that the person could really let down their guards, relax, and look at it from a different way. And really look at, these important points. There's some ideas in there like college for everyone, or things that I know have been talked about, although honestly I've had my mind on this book for about 12, 13 years now. So a lot of these ideas were in my head before I've heard them publicly. But it allows you to see it in a different way rather than thinking, okay, can we get there? Let's just erase some boundaries, look at it from a different way, and then decide, okay, you know, now that I see it in action, is this something that really makes sense? And for my blurbs, I've actually tried to write a little bit of that as well, allow the user to think for themselves. And I'll tell you, I've gotten mixed reviews on that. The best reviewer that I got, I actually did a little digging on who, you know, who he was and other things he's bought. And he's clearly a conservative person, someone that is, you know, from an opinion standpoint, seems to be on the opposite end of the spectrum than I am personally. But the fact that he raved about the book, you know, on Amazon, he said almost everything I wanted, you know, to hear, you know, that the book was straightforward, but allowed you to really, you know, think about these issues in a different way. And to, you know, have someone on what I consider to be on the other side. I mean, the fact that I know that even one person out there said that, of course, I'd like a lot more than one, but, it, you know, it made me feel great. And so I kind of stuck with the whatever it is I had written in there at the time that I saw what he wrote when I know he bought it. And it seems to be working well enough for me, but really just the whole concept of social inequality is really, I think, you know, raising some eyebrows nowadays more than, you know, even say before a month ago.
Okay. So you mentioned that things have definitely had a change for you. So talk to me. So let's go back to, when was your publication date? I can look it up here.
It was
February.
It was on... Yeah, it officially launched on my 50th birthday, March 1 of this past year.
Oh, okay.
I launched it a couple days before, just because I said my bucket list was to have a book published by my birthday.
By your birthday, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Amazon's got it as Valentine's Day on here. So,
So
talk to me about, selling it as a piece of very political fiction, in March versus in June. Has that changed for you without you changing anything?
Absolutely has. I've been with the environment, you know, heating up in the social economic sector, you know, with a lot of marching. And I'm actually based in New York City, so I'm in the kind of the heart of a lot of what's going on in terms of the protests and conversations. And it seems that when I post anything, whether it be on Facebook or anywhere else, that, you know, talks about my book, I get much, much quicker and more reaction than I have, you know, now, than I have earlier on. Earlier on, it was more congratulatory kind of stuff. And, you know, that very interesting, great topic. Now it's like, you know, this is so important. You know, I'm so glad you've written this. Yeah. You know, because when people are listening, it is an education. I'm not trying to do this. I'm trying to be very careful not to do this as a right versus wrong or one way versus another, but instead let's explore. Let's really think more about it. And I think that message has been getting across. I tend to do that more in the marketing, in the like email marketing. I tend to get a little bit more, you know, in involved in that, you know, just a different, we need to educate ourselves. We need to think more. You know, we have a lot of facts now. What do we do with those facts? You know, let's think about, you know, the smart way to advance it.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. So I think that covers my initial questions here. Do you have anything else you would like to bring up?
No, not really. But like I said before, for the bang for your buck, I have to say that the exposition, again, as a first time writer, you know, was probably the biggest surprise to me, in terms of, you know, how, how difficult it is to keep it as organic. You know, I know this conversation, people say maybe you pull it out altogether, but that isn't always realistic in many cases. So I really, really commend you guys for spending more time. I probably wish I had heard these podcasts before earlier on in my writing to really make it an exclamation point on you know, what really is involved. And I'm glad that you spent more than just a single episode or a brief mention on it.
All right. Awesome.
That's my exclamation point. Yeah.
tell people where they can find your books and maybe find you as an author and other projects you're working on and all of that.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So the book again is Dominant Traits. You can go to dominanttrait.com or you can email me at author@dominanttrait.com. But if you go to dominanttrait.com, it actually has quite a bit of information about the book. I'll post anything, you know, I'm sure I'll post a link to this podcast and any other upcoming events that I have. I am in discussions with a few other people to do a couple blogs or as well as podcasts. I think those are going to tend to be more political in nature rather than, you know, writing as a craft. But I'll certainly link those as well.
So awesome. Well, thank you for your time. This was, I think this will probably be our final piece on exposition. And, I think there was one thing that I had mentioned in the earlier episodes. We were talking about the essential pieces of exposition, the who, the how, the what, and I had left when out of that, initial discussion with Jay. As I was mentioning, it was a piece of setting. But as I was looking back at the expanse, when is a big part of the expanse's exposition as well, establishing that political dynamic that we read those samples from in the earlier pieces on discussion there. So I did want to throw that final piece in that when does have some components that are still exposition, and you'll want to look at, you know, some of the tools that we've discussed here. Again, I thank Michael Abramson for his time, and as always, thanks for listening.